Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today. We're going to be with you for the next 56 minutes or so and have an interesting show. Delighted today to have an extremely timely guest and a very busy guest, Colleen M. Kelly. She is president of the National Treasury Employees Union. Been much in the news lately. And the IRS has probably taken as many hits as anybody in the world as far as the furloughs go. And certainly next to the Defense Department, the largest number of employees who have been furloughed have been IRS. Colleen, we got some good news yesterday, and I must say the tips came from two different NTEU members, different parts of the country. And the word is that at least one coming furlough day has been canceled.
That's right, Mike. July 22nd, Monday, had been scheduled as a day that the IRS would be closed and providing no service to America's taxpayers, and that IRS employees would not be paid. And the IRS did just announce yesterday that the July 22nd furlough day was being canceled. So we still want to see the August 30th canceled, but for now, July 22nd is good news.
But you're batting 500 there. That's not bad in baseball terms. Well, it would appear that this new team at the IRS, Danny Werfel being at the head of it, is looking at about every possible way to avoid these. And I know they've been consulting regularly with you guys on bonuses and furloughs and everything else.
Yes, there have been a lot of conversations and, of course, a lot of issues in play, all of which are impacting employees, and so many of those things are impacting employees negatively. So this piece of good news about July 22nd hopefully is just the beginning of that good news, and we can turn this around for employees and let them get back to being focused on what they're trying to do every day, which is provide quality service to America's taxpayers.
Well, Colleen, you and I both go back a long way. I precede you even, I guess. And it's very fashionable for people to say things have never been worse. But in some ways, I don't recall a time when you had something like a three-year salary freeze, which is, of course, almost like the Depression era, if it even went that long, and furloughs as well. I mean, these are tough times, aren't they?
They are very tough times, Mike, and I would agree with you when I talk about this with our members and with our leaders. I always acknowledge when there are challenging times for federal employees, and we surely have had those in the past, and they, you know, kind of go with the territory. However, I think it's fair to say that anyone that I've spoken to agrees with what you said, that this really is kind of the worst of times, and really where everything is being negatively aimed at federal employees rather than recognizing them for what they do and that they should receive a fair wage and respect and, the rights that they have should be honored. Those things just aren't happening today.
Yeah, well, it's intriguing to look at this and see that it's coming from so many directions, you know, starting with that campaign a couple of years ago, which started out that federal workers are overpaid, and then that sort of built momentum, and it seemed to give the critics in Congress, critics of government, critics of the Internal Revenue Service, critics of enforcement, more ammunition to say this: we've got to put a stop to this.
Oh, that was surely kind of the beginning of one of those conversations. But you're right; they've come from many directions. A lot of it is fiction and misinformation, and yet there are those who do not value and respect federal employees and the work that they do, and so they latch on to that fiction or that misinformation and try to use that as an excuse to eliminate services that really are being provided, that they don't look at it that way, but that's really what they're doing. And, to eliminate federal employees and to ensure that they are not treated with the dignity and respect that they deserve every day.
Well, you know, most of the media reporting on the sequestration and the furloughs, it's been hard for a lot of reporters who don't cover this on a day-to-day basis to grasp it. But it's been in sheer numbers and programs, and whether the Air Force crack drill team will fly or not, and that kind of thing. But you've been out on the road, literally. I know I talked to your associate, Dina Long, and she's been kind of tracking you, and I know you've been flying all over the country visiting with NTEU chapters. I've been hearing from not only a lot of IRS employees, but NTEU members and members calling as union members, and I've never seen anything like it. Can you share with us some of the things you've picked up? I mean, human interest, if you will.
Well, I think for the most part, what I would say is they are very disheartened. They are looking for the end of this. As I said, they realize that as federal employees, there are challenging times, but they come and they go. This streak right now doesn't appear that it's going to be over anytime soon, and that's especially true with the sequestration and an additional 9 years of it, unless Congress does something to change it. So I think that many frontline employees are just feeling very disheartened. They're feeling very unappreciated, not respected. They're not looking for any special consideration. They're just looking for what's fair, for what they've earned, and for a recognition that what they do makes a difference to the country. You know, even in the IRS, when you think about probably, you know, every conversation ends up saying that the IRS, you know, is not the most popular agency. And NTU's goal has never been to make the IRS the most popular agency. What we want to do is to have the public recognize that the revenue that is collected by the IRS, and of course they collect that based on laws that are passed by Congress. So when they are enforcing those laws, they bring in the revenue that funds 93% of the federal government. So whether you like the IRS or not, if you like school lunches for children or education programs or highways or a safe country, safe borders, safe air and skies, Social Security, veterans assistance, you know, fill in the blank. Whatever it is that is important to you and your family, and I realize that is different for everyone, but whatever it is funded by the work done by IRS employees collecting that revenue that funds the entire federal government. So the importance of the work that they do and the value that they add to the country really cannot be overstated. And if more people would think of it that way, including Congress, and also think of it in terms of the not just the cost to the country, but the benefit. For every $1 that is invested in the IRS, they return $7 to the Treasury Department. That is not NTU's number. That is an IRS number that they will tell you. So that the money that is appropriated, budgeted, whatever technical word you want to use, I really think it should be framed as an investment, not an appropriations or a budget, because there is that kind of a return that is just critical to the country, especially when we say we're trying to overcome the deficit and to pay the deficit down. Well, every time they don't fund the IRS, they are increasing the deficit every day.
Well, Warren Buffett would take those odds. Spend a buck, return seven. I think he'd like that. You know, before the sequestration started and both sides, the White House and the Congress, said it shouldn't happen, it can't happen, it won't happen. Some that said it wouldn't happen. And then when it became more imminent, they were talking about the horror stories. They were talking about FBI agents being sent home and a variety of things. Lo and behold, it happened. And although it kind of got off to a slow start, suddenly the Congress said, oh, no, we can't touch the air traffic controllers, to your point about what services people need. And we can't touch the meat and poultry inspection in the Agriculture Department. And a number of programs that people take for granted suddenly became very vital and, in some cases, vital to the national security. And people are starting to realize what the government does and the things that are in. And we may not all agree on every program, but I think most people buy into this, that it is a good return on the investment.
And, you know, the effects of sequestration, while there were surely hundreds, probably thousands of news stories written about it, if you work every day with federal employees like I do, what NTU knew was that there would not be an immediate impact seen across the country on March 1st when sequestration went into effect. A lot of the drama that was described would have happened perhaps if there was a government shutdown, because everything would be immediate and go from full speed to zero. But that doesn't happen under the sequester. It was a very gradual. We knew that. We knew it would lead to things like these furlough days. Employees in IRS as well as the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency employees, have been serving these unpaid furlough days since March they started. So you know, we knew that this would be gradual, and we knew that it would be kind of a month by month to see what the agencies actually had to do to bring the spending in line with the sequestration cuts. And while a lot of people are breathing a sigh of relief right now because their agency has not had to do furlough days, even though IRS, EPA, DOD are doing them, everybody's breathing a sigh of relief, and that's nice, except that on October 1st, the next round of sequester is going to start unless Congress takes some action to address this. And it's scheduled. You know, I tell frontline employees all the time, this isn't over on September 30th. This is not a one-year piece of legislation. It's a 10-year piece of legislation. And I think too many people don't realize that.
Take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
The Cybersecurity Report is brought to you by University of Maryland University College.
Earlier this year, information security firm Mandiant identified a previously unknown group of hackers thought to be in China.
People referred to China or Chinese hackers, but there was plenty of wiggle room to assume it could be a collection of guys working in somebody's basement without a tie to the government.
Richard Baitlick, chief of security for Mandiant, says the group is called Unit 61398, a part of the Chinese military. I'm J.J. Green.
Secure your future with a bachelor's or master's degree in cybersecurity, available entirely online from University of Maryland University College. Their programs have been specially developed by experts from government and private industry, so you'll get the real-world skills you need for your career. Plus, UMUC is designated as a National Center of Academic Excellence in Information Assurance Education by NSA and DHS. University of Maryland University College. Call 800-888-UMUC or visit umuc.edu/cybersecurity. Security.
What makes PowerJobs.com powerful? It's you. PowerJobs.com was created for you, the Washington area professional working in federal contracting, nonprofit and association industries, technology, and government relations. PowerJobs.com features thousands of top-level openings from hundreds of the region's leading employers. There's already been 2 million job searches on PowerJobs.com so far this year. Tap into the power of PowerJobs.com, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com. Empowering today's top talent.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Please join Max Kakis, defense editor of Signal Magazine, on Friday, July 19th at 2:05 p.m. for a new installment of AFCEA Answers. Max will be joined by a panel of government and industry professionals to discuss cloud computing. The panel will include Terry Halverson, CIO, Department of the Navy. Don't miss AFCEA Answers with Max Kakis on Friday, July 19th at 2:05 p.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by AFCEA International and brought to you by HP and Intel.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
It's not always easy being a dad.
When's the fairy princess coming?
Any minute now.
What? What do you mean she's not coming?
But it's always worth it.
It's a fairy princess!
It is I, Groot Zinkelbell.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
I know it's really you, Groot. I'm just pretending for the other kids.
Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4-DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hey, welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and as usual, we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Delighted today to have an extremely timely guest and a very busy guest, Colleen M. Kelly. She is president of the National Treasury Employees Union with sequestration. I think we're going to start seeing the impact of it in communities around the country that we, you know, we don't normally think of as major federal centers, but you've got places like Ogden, Utah, which is a, as you well know, a big IRS center, and Hill Air Force Base is there.
Yes.
And you've got San Antonio and places, Cincinnati and Newport and that area, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, and these cities around the country where I would say, in some respects, you know, on a per capita basis, the federal government dollar and the contractor dollar is probably at least as important, if not more so, than it is in the Washington area.
Well, I think that's right, Mike, and I think that too many are not thinking about that because it did not have that immediate impact, you know, as we were talking about. But it's there, and it will impact local communities across the country that may think that they are immune because they're not a big metropolitan area.
Well, you know, you mentioned something earlier about NTEU wasn't trying to make IRS the most popular agency, and I think that's a smart move. It'd be a waste of time. But the one thing I've noticed, and I have covered the IRS for years, before I took over the federal beat at the Washington Post, I covered Treasury, the Postal Service, and a couple of other minor federal agencies, and I got to know them particularly well, FDA. And it was interesting to me of the dedication level, and sometimes when you're meeting somebody for the first time on a plane or at a social event, it takes guts to say you work for the Internal Revenue Service. It's a dangerous place to work sometimes.
Yes, it does, because you can guess what the immediate reaction will be, rather than, you know, thinking about the important work that they do. You know, they get blamed often for, you know, the enforcement work that they do. And that enforcement work is enforcing the laws that are passed by Congress, which just too often is left out of the conversation.
Yeah, I always tell people, if you don't like your tax bracket, don't take it up with your revenue agent. Talk to Congress that
That's
sets
right.
these things up.
That's right.
Well, we have gotten here at Federal News Radio in the comments section and in direct emails to us, just some amazingly articulate and really sad and poignant memos from people about how this sequestration is affecting them, not only financially, and that's a very real thing, but emotionally and psychologically, what it's doing to them. Are you picking that up in your trips around the country?
I do, Mike. What I see is a lot of really kind of sadness. You know, sometimes it's distress. It depends on the extent of the economic impact. There are many federal employees that in their family they have two federal employees, both of whom are being furloughed. And so when there's talk about a 10% impact on someone's paycheck for 2 weeks, it could be 20%, you know, in some families. And that's just really not being thought through by many. And I think there's also just kind of the feeling of not feeling, you know, valued and recognized for the important work that they do and wondering if it's still worth it. You know, we've been talking for years about the number of federal employees who are eligible to retire in the next few years. And I think these last few years, including sequestration and the furlough threats, the actual furloughs, if you were in an agency that implemented them. But again, that's not being removed from the discussion for October 1st. So, you know, I tell them this will be over for this year on September 30th, and then we start all over again. And until we see what Congress does, we just don't know what that will look like. I think more agencies will have to talk about furloughs than we're talking about it this year. And those who did furloughs this year will be in even worse shape next year. So I think there's just a real kind of a resignation by many out there who are just tired of, you know, feeling like they have a target on them because they're a federal employee, that these just nonstop actions or threats of actions, you know, just kind of highlight that the work that they do, you know, is not understood, I think, for starters. And as a result of it not being understood, it's not recognized. You know, most of them don't do this job because they expect huge recognition. They're not looking for big bonuses. They know they'll never get that in the federal government. You know, they're not going to have a parade in their honor. They're looking to do a good job, to feel like they use their skills and abilities, to feel that they have opportunities for promotion, to feel that they're treated fairly. And, you know, and that's a good week for them. If they feel that the work that they've done makes a difference for the country. And what I see is less and less of that. I just see a lot of resignation, that this is the way it is, that it's been this way for so long. And while in the beginning they thought we would turn the corner pretty quickly, they're feeling, you know, very tired.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that I talk to, and others of us here at Federal News Radio, we have our group of contacts and friends and whatnot, and after a while you get to know each other, and you know, you exchange emails and sometimes telephone calls, but you sort of get a sense of people. And one thing I'm sensing, and a lot of the people that I deal with, I must say, are extremely funny. They have very good sense of humor. I mean, any of them could write and some of them have in fact written a humor column that I would be happy to use on my byline. So these are jolly, upbeat people for the most. But what I'm sensing, and with a lot of them, it's anger to some extent, but there's kind of a sadness there that something's happened, something's gone out of being a civil servant.
I think that's right. I think, you know, and the issue around, or the word, using the word anger, I see some of that, and it turns pretty quickly to sadness and to, like I said, just being tired. But surely there's anger out there. Depending on, you know, what the day is and what the issue is and where it's coming from, you know, the new attacks, whether it's on their retirement system or on their collective bargaining rights or, you know, wherever. It really is nonstop, and it's almost like every day they just come to work and wonder, what will it be today?
Yeah, what's next? I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it, and some of our correspondents have mentioned it. And Monday's Federal Report column, the headline was, "What if these are the good old days?" And I was trying to be kind of lighthearted and saying, as bad as things are, we've got furloughs, we have a 3-year pay freeze. These could be the good old days, because beginning with the new fiscal year, October 1, Congress is going to be back in business. They're going to be looking at things like the chained CPI to reduce annuity increases forever, beginning whenever they start doing it. Possible talk of a voucher system for health insurance that would make people pay a larger share of their health premiums and probably drive many people into less valuable, possibly even inferior plans. A number of things that are kicking around, and the reaction I got to it was just amazing. If I can just read you one. At some point, the economy will fully recover and grow, just like it always has. Young professional federal employees will leave Uncle Sam's employ for the private sector, where salaries are much larger. Uncle will have a difficult time attracting top-notch college graduates, doctors, lawyers, scientists, computer programmers, just to name a few. Uncle already has a difficult time attracting talented executive management, and this is simply going to get worse. It's laughable as pay when you compare pay to the private sector. In order to attract and retain talented employees, Uncle Sam will double down on the old service your country mantra. Service to my country in exchange for congressional demonization, public sector denigration, furlough days, service to my country indeed. And that's, you know, well said, well written, but that's very common, kind of what we're getting now.
No, it is. And I think the worry about what the future might hold is very, very real. I saw your story about the good old days, and you know, my first thought was, I have had the thought, but I sure hope that's not the case.
Yeah.
But, you know, there have been, you know, years in the past where there were issues, and federal employees felt they were not being properly and fairly treated. And, you know, I would say, look, you know, the tide will turn and things will get better, and we're going to continue to stand together and to, you know, put the face of federal employees out there that needs to be, which is the dedicated, skilled workforce that you are. And, you know, and this too shall pass kind of thing. When the last 3 years, as you cited, you know, in particular, have, you know, continued to go on rather than to turn the corner, it has become very frustrating, and it really makes people wonder what the future holds and what it means to be a federal employee. As I said, they always knew that there would be moments and days and someone, you know, someday who wanted to take issue with something, whether it was federal pay or retirement or their rights. But, you know, the facts got out there, and we prevailed, and they knew that, you know, that we would stand together and it would be okay. But this has, because this has been a 3 year, you know, the last 3 years have been rough on so many fronts. The real question is what it will do to the possibilities for a potential workforce of the future. I think that that's absolutely right. While the economy hasn't turned as fast as we hoped it will turn. And when it does, and people have those options, they're not going to forget how they were treated. And they're going to make a conscious decision about whether that's a career of treatment they want in the future or whether they want to leave federal service. And unfortunately, I think that's what will happen.
Talking with Colleen Kelly, she's president of the National Treasury Employees Union. She's been flying all over the country the last couple of weeks, visiting NTEU chapters, telling them what's going on here, talking about the pay freeze, talking about furloughs. We got the good news yesterday from tips to myself and Sean McAlley here at Federal News Radio from some NTEU members who said one of the furlough days has been canceled. And Colleen, could you go through that again?
Yes, the IRS employees have already served 3 furlough days, with the agency being closed for 3 days. And there were 2 more scheduled, July 22nd and August 30th. And just yesterday, the IRS acting commissioner announced that the July 22nd furlough day was being canceled. And that is very good news as far as it goes, of course. Now, what we're hoping is we can replicate that with a similar announcement about August 30th. But that is still on the books right now as a day that the IRS will be closed, not available to taxpayers, and employees will not be paid.
Now, if for some reason, if they are closed or the days that have been closed, if that's delayed any taxes and whatnot, will people be charged penalties if they're late for something? I mean, there's no excuse for this, is there?
The IRS had put out tips about that, Mike. I wouldn't want to answer that type, but they've put out a lot of information about tax due dates or installment dates or things like that, and how they are impacted or not by the closing date.
So it's on the radar scope for sure.
Yeah, I'd go to the IRS website.
Very good. Okay. Before the email that I mentioned that I got from, based on that column, Are These the Good Old Days? Poignant email. Very good. And then you mentioned it as well. When the economy improves, a lot of people think that the thing that's been preventing the retirement tsunami is the fact that the job market is terrible out there. 7-something% unemployment. And for federal workers who are in highly skilled jobs and high demand jobs, a very bad market indeed. But as people say, once that market improves, and it will, people are going to retire, flee, go into the private sector. And the government, which is trying to get the best and brightest, and President Obama assured former OPM director John Berry, he said he wanted to make working for the government cool again. And to that end, they've been hiring the best and the brightest that they can get. But they're going to have a problem getting some of those people. And if we go into reductions in force, and the Defense Department has already raised the possibility of a RIF starting as early possibly as October 1, the government rules are, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's last hired, first fired. So if you brought on people over the last 3-4 years, you know, top-notch college graduates and interns and all that sort of thing, they would be the first to go, wouldn't they?
Yeah, the regs on RIFs are a little more complicated than that, but it has to do with when you were hired, years of service, evaluations, what your ratings have been, if you have veterans' preference. So there are a number of factors. But in general, I would say, Mike, the way you describe it is, you know, that would be those would be the employees who would be most at risk. And I would suggest that any agency who this year, in the first year of sequester, have looked at furlough days, have even considered them, mm-hmm. much less implemented them, I believe if the sequester stays in place, they will have to look at RIFs. You look at a place like the IRS, who has they have had their budget cut by almost $1 billion. over the past 2 years, and the proposals for the budget for 14 are a 24% cut in the current budget that was already a billion below. So agencies like that, DOD is the one that you mentioned, EPA has already served furlough days. I don't know how much more they can do. You know, if you cannot do it with furlough days, then you have to look at a RIF. So, you know, when I say that, I often feel bad even raising that with federal employees because that's frightening. And I tell them, I'm not saying this to scare you. I'm saying it because we have to do everything we can to have Congress act and either amend the sequester legislation or rescind it. But if it stays in place, agencies are just not going to have a choice. And it will hit each agency at a different time, depending on their size, you know, and what their first-year reaction had to be to the sequester. But for those who had to do furlough days this year, I would not be surprised at all and would fully expect that RIF would be in the conversation for the future.
Well, as anybody who knows me knows, I'm not a numbers guy. They don't trust me with any kind of numbers around here, rightly so. But that said, in 2009, in 2010, if you had said, Mike, I'll bet you $100 that there are going to be 3 years of three years of pay freeze for federal workers, I would have taken that bet because that's just incomprehensible. One, possibly. Two, maybe. Three, never. And yet here we are with no end in sight.
I hear you, and I think most actually would have taken the bet with you, Mike, because it was just nothing that had ever been in the history for federal employees, no matter how far back you look.
So, you know, we haven't really touched on the budget. You just mentioned it. But, and again, I don't want to appear to be, I'm not shilling for the IRS or the National Treasury Employees Union or anybody else. We all know there's waste in every large organization. The government, it being one of the largest, probably has some of the most waste. But that said, you've got an outfit like the IRS that returns $7 for every one you invest. The tax laws are getting more complicated all the time, thanks to Congress. The number of people paying taxes or number of people who should be paying taxes is increasing all the time. Once the economy starts booming again, and it seems to be doing pretty well, that there's going to be more revenue generated. I don't see the rationale for, or what is the rationale that they give for cutting the IRS budget?
Well, there's really no valid rationale. I mean, the numbers, even though you're not a numbers guy, Mike, you were right. You know, if they bring in $7 for every $1 invested, you don't have to be a numbers person to, you know, see the wisdom, you know, in funding that kind of an operation. So, you know, for those who choose to not want to fund the IRS, you know, they point to anything and nothing. You know, they point to allegations that aren't true. They point to, you mentioned, you know, to waste. And you could find, I agree with you, 1,000%. You can find that in any organization, and it should be cleaned up everywhere. That's for sure. But there is nothing that you can point to that would justify cutting the IRS budget that brings in the revenue by 24% over what it's already been cut under sequester. It makes zero business sense for the federal government to do that. Zero.
Hard to beat that. And Colleen, you get the last word. Thank you, Colleen Kelly, for being with us. I know you've been on the road last couple of weeks, and we really appreciate your time. Stay tuned. We'll be talking with the Federal Times people about what's coming up here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
At Kaiser Permanente, we want you to live well, be well, and thrive. Now, there's an app for that. With the new Kaiser Permanente mobile app, designed specifically for the needs of our members, you can schedule a routine appointment with your doctor's office, refill a prescription, check on your test results, review your medical records, email your doctor's office, all from your smartphone, directly and securely. Now, in addition to apps that let you find a local yogurt shop or post pictures of your dog wearing a hat, there's an app that lets you do something even more remarkable. It helps you stay connected with everyone who's important to your health and your family's health. Get the Kaiser Permanente mobile app at the Android Market or the Apple App Store, or bookmark kp.org on your smartphone. It's as easy as slicing flying fruit with a ninja sword, if you know what I mean. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Apple is a registered trademark of Apple Inc. Android is a trademark of Google Inc.
Here's Wallace Sand, federal CTO for Scout Technologies, on a recent continuous monitoring panel discussion heard on Federal News Radio, sponsored by McAfee and for Scout Technologies.
You know, we use a crawl, walk, run deployment methodology. You know, crawling first, getting visibility, seeing what's on your network, and then once you move through these phases, then you can take action at some point, you know, quarantining, blocking, those things. Everything in the middle up to that point, that's where our integration with McAfee comes into play. So we have bi-directional relationship with the McAfee products.
Government agencies choose ForeScout to meet continuous diagnostic and mitigation requirements. ForeScout Counteract is a powerful plug-and-play and agentless network visibility and control automation solution designed to help federal agencies control network access, protect sensitive data, and comply with FISM standards, defense guidelines, and best practices. ForeScout has been chosen by more than 1,400 of the world's most secure enterprises and military installations for global deployments spanning 37 countries. Go to ForeScout.com to find out why.
Google scans every single picture that you upload to Google+. What it does, it learns what your family members look like. It groups photos of your family members together. It can tell if your subjects are smiling. So if you've got a subject smiling in three photos, and one photo they've got their eyes closed and are frowning, it will take the face from a good photo and paste it into the bad photo so everybody's smiling.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Battlegrounds change, front lines evolve, but defense does not stop. How will you face down new threats with fewer dollars? Turn to Deloitte. We help leaders from CEOs to four-star generals deliver innovative, efficient solutions. With our private sector insight and public sector experience in technology, supply chain, analytics, and more, we'll help you shape the future of the DoD. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Would you trust someone with disabilities to test high-tech protective combat gear? Our armed forces do. Source America provides the military with a highly trained, exceptional workforce, people with significant disabilities. In fact, Source America provides vital expertise to thousands of federal customers across the country. For everything from contract closeouts to food service to call center support. Learn more at sourceamerica.org. An Ability One authorized enterprise.
Here's Sheila Campbell, Director, Center for Excellence in Digital Government, Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies, GSA, on the Real Deal on Digital Government panel, sponsored by Accenture.
We have a service that we need to deliver to our customers and to think about what is the end result that we want. How do we make it mobile enabled? And one way to achieve that is by thinking about how do we test it with users. And so one of the big things that we're focused on in my shop is usability testing and focus on user-centered design.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Accenture, high performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We consolidated more than 100 defense financial systems into one, and we helped eliminate $348 million in U.S. federal fleet, inventory, and freight costs. As a partner with both defense and industry knowledge, Accenture is uniquely equipped to help you accomplish your missions. To learn more, visit Accenture.com/federal. Or follow us on Twitter at AccentureFed.
Heavy rains, like we've had recently, run off hard surfaces in urban areas, causing erosion and pollution in nearby streams that ultimately connect with the Chesapeake Bay. In areas planning major redevelopment, like Tyson's Corner, Ted Scott of Stormwater Maintenance and Consulting thinks there's a golden opportunity.
It's possible to have the project enhance water quality as compared to what's been there for years.
Scott says planting vegetation on specially engineered soil between urban and natural areas can allow water to seep underground and remove pollutants.
Little things like this have a significant impact as long as a lot of them happen.
Scott adds such planning must be made early because it involves
not only different ways of designing stormwater practices, but how the land is actually planned, how the sites are laid out.
Scott says that includes keeping water-repellent surfaces away from natural watersheds as much as possible. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. It's Mike Causey here, and now we move on to one of my favorite segments of the show, talking with the Federal Times folks about whatever they're working on. And Sean Riley is with us. And, Sean, thank you for standing by.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. How are you, Mike?
Really good. Hey, normally we talk about the dog days of summer and August and all that. This is things are really jumping out there, and most of them not particularly good. But I guess in our business, bad news is good news. What are you guys working on? What are you seeing?
Well, we're trying to keep up. You know, the big story is clearly for us is the Defense Department furloughs, which, as you know, began last week. And I was talking to a DOD civilian employee who, this morning, who was reminding me that I think for the most part, most furloughed employees have yet to see the impact in their paychecks. The real pain is going to be felt a little later this month when they receive the first check that reflects, you know, essentially what will be about a 20% cut in their pay because of the one-day-a-week furloughs that DOD has implemented. And then along the same lines, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel was down in Jacksonville, Florida, at the Naval Air Station there yesterday and announced that the Pentagon plans to cut basically, it's headquarters staff, the joint staff, the workforce in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and the staffs at the military services headquarters by 20% by 2019, I think FY19. So, you know, it's a further recognition that the budget crunch that DOD and other agencies is not going away, and that has to be taken into account.
Well, you know, and people always say when it's down the road that this can be done by attrition, but what a lot of people forget, the historical fact is that when the job market gets tight and when the government starts it downsizing itself, people who would normally retire, the people you'd expect to be part of the attrition thing, hang on.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think there are two dynamics going on. One is the one you mentioned, but I think there are also some federal employees who, are retirement eligible, are fed up, and for one reason or another, you know, no pay raises for the last couple of years, the difficulty of the hassle of having to deal with the management challenges of sequestration, and they're leaving. But the fact you mentioned certainly could come into play. And of course, you know, the question is, are the people who are leaving, if you do it by attrition, are the people who are leaving the ones you want to leave? Or are those, you know, does that include some folks that you'd like to keep?
Well, you know, we focus so much in the furloughs on the Defense Department because it is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's the biggest federal agency. It has a presence in virtually every state. I think I read somewhere that it may be that there are no defense installations in Iowa, but that may be wrong. Okay. But everybody has a big air base, Navy base, Army base, or something.
At least the National Guard Armory.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is a presence there, whether you are even aware of it or not. But some of the things that have kind of flown under the radar, Internal Revenue Service. You know, they've had three furlough days so far, and they've been going on long enough that they are being hit by it. People are getting a paycheck that's down 20% from the one day of the two-week pay period that they missed it. Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, they've really been slammed. They've had 5 days so far. Now, the IRS apparently has canceled one upcoming furlough day that was to be coming Monday, and Danny Werfel, the new commissioner, said they're not going to do that. They're going to try to work to mitigate the others that are planned, and the EEOC has canceled its two furlough days that were yet to come, two or three, and it has canceled those. But Colleen Kelly, earlier in the show, she's president of the National Treasury Employees Union, she said that, you know, she agreed with me that these may be the good old days right now, that once fiscal 2014 kicks in, and that's October 1, things could really get rough.
Well, that's right. I mean, at this point, Congress is as deadlocked as ever on what to do about the FY14 spending bills. And if they don't come to an agreement by October 1st, then another round of sequestration goes into effect. If you assume that agencies have managed to cut out a lot, you know, have managed to find the slack, the inefficiencies to deal with this year's round of sequestration, the question is, what are they going to do next year? And I think that's one factor over at the Defense Department that's motivating this decision, although it won't have an immediate impact, to reduce the headquarters staff, just because I think there's a recognition that things are probably not going to get a whole lot better anytime soon.
You mentioned something earlier about morale, and I know we here at Federal News Radio, and I'm sure you guys at the Federal Times, we've literally, when you get 10 emails, you say, we're swamped. Mm-hmm. In this case, we have really, truly been swamped with emails, not only to individual former reporters, including myself, but also to the comments section of these different stories. And I'm reading them very carefully, and there's some people out there who are, they are angry, they are bitter, but the sense that I get in this is that they are sad, they're hurt. It's almost as if a parent, in this case the government, has betrayed them.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. And I've seen that, you know, I've gotten emails with similar sentiments. There's a feeling that, you know, that the country which they serve, sometimes at significant sacrifice, doesn't care, and that there's no political pressure on Congress to do anything about sequestration, you know, and no broad-based pressure in any case. As you probably saw, a couple of DOD workers yesterday started a petition drive on We the People, which is a part of the White House website.
Yes.
And, you know, essentially saying that, you know, they're willing to serve, you know, keep serving their country, to take one for the team, but they want their country to recognize what they're doing. And I think for some, they just don't see that. They just don't see that.
Well, you know, I've noticed early on when I started covering this beat, and I was a much, much younger guy, but I noticed very quickly that when people would talk about having been in government, whether it was the IRS or OMB or Interior, didn't matter. People who had been in the federal government and people who had been in the military, they would say, yeah, I served 10 years or mm-hmm. I served. But that word serve keeps coming up, and you don't hear it in the private sector. You know, we may love our jobs and be devoted to them, but we don't say I served IBM for 26 years. And there's a different mindset that people seems to me have when they go into the federal family that we don't quite get in the private sector.
That's a great point. I mean, when did you ever hear anyone say private service as
yeah.
opposed to public service? And I think, you know, obviously you get it's, I think it varies, but you do have a lot of people who, you know, are motivated by the concept of serving the public good. I mean, that's one reason, one factor that got them into government in the first place. And to go back to the point you were making a moment ago, they don't see that the public really, from their perspective, the public doesn't seem to care about what they do or think or value it as important.
Well, it does sound to the jaded private sector type, it does sound awfully corny. And, you know, you want to bring in the violins when people are talking about this way. But they genuinely feel it. They mm-hmm. they feel in service. So what else is going on? The Postal Service, we haven't heard anything from them in a while.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. There is a, if it hasn't happened already, I think a House Appropriations Subcommittee is supposed to mark up its version of the spending bill that includes the Postal Service or some language affecting the Postal Service. And I checked this morning, and the same language has been in there for a couple of decades now, prohibiting any change to the current six-day mail delivery schedule is once again in place. Of course, that's the Postal Service's perhaps number one objective is to eliminate Saturday delivery, but it looks like Congress is going to go along with that. There's also a hearing this afternoon before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee on sort of the path forward on postal reform, assuming there is a path forward. I think that some people might consider that optimistic. You know, there just hasn't been, you know, despite some optimistic predictions early on in the year, you know, the same old issues that have prevented Congress from reaching consensus on a bill are still out there. You know, primarily, how deeply do you want to try and cut costs? You know, how much more management freedom do you want to give the Postal Service? Do you want to let them pull out of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program? Those kinds of things. And, you know, overall, the Postal Service seems to be doing a little bit better financially than it has. I heard the Postmaster General, Pat Donahue, speak a couple months ago, and he said that he thought revenue could be stabilized at around $65 billion a year, which is a change from the last few years when it was in decline. And they, you know, they continue to make progress in their downsizing initiatives, you know, closing processing plants, that kind of thing. So I think as long as they can hold on, as long as their condition is, financial condition is not absolutely critical, Congress is not going to feel impelled to act.
You know, I've often wondered, I remember back to the days of postal reform, and they went in, they reformed the, quote, post office department, mm-hmm. took it out of the cabinet, took it out of politics or as much as they could, and said, okay, you're going to be a quasi-government corporation, you're going to make a profit, yada, 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 everything will be good. Well, nobody had heard of something called email or Twitter, things like that.
I mean,
that was Buck Rogers science fiction. But now that it's happened, it sometimes seems to me, and the Postal Service has been very arrogant in some ways, but it sometimes seems to me that Congress and the politicians are treating them unfairly because they're expecting them to make a profit at the same time forcing them to pay up front for their retiree health costs and doing things that a private business wouldn't do.
Yeah, precisely. And I think there's a lot of kind of quiet resentment among Postal Service leadership about that, that on the one hand, they're supposed to operate a business, except when they want to do anything that might offend a member of Congress's constituents. In five-day mail delivery, going to five-day mail delivery is one of those.
Good luck with
and
that.
And they simply can't, from the perspective of postal leadership, they just don't have the same latitude to operate like a business.
Good deal.
That a real business would
Sean
have.
Riley, thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk to you next Wednesday. Meantime, have a good week. Stay safe.
Thanks, Mike. You too.